Davidson. I like this Davidson.
It's the Bottom Line Podcast.
With your host,
Davidson Baker.
Bada bing, we are live. It is episode 45 of the Bottom Line Podcast, episode number 18 of the MMA Tailored Bottom Line Podcast. If you are listening and or watching on whatever device or streaming service of your choice, you should know that I am the host of this podcast. My name is Davidson Baker. It is very nice to have you joining me today. And not just joining me, but joining us as back on the program is the man, the myth, the legend himself. My guy, Marcel Dorf. How we doing all the way from the Netherlands?
Doing great, man. Like I said, very happy with my team. Got the draw in München against Bayern. Champions League, football, soccer for you guys. I'm a big fan.
As you can see, yeah, right behind him. I'll give him the camera viewpoint again in a second. You see that right behind him, he's got the Ajax sticker representing, tying 1-1 with the mighty Bayern Munich today.
Awesome stuff, man. So, I'm good. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing really well. I actually just picked up an Xbox One this week. And do you play FIFA on Xbox One or PlayStation? You got the new one? How is it?
It's pretty cool, man. I really like the journey stuff because I did that like the last two ones. So, yeah, that's fun, and I just like doing career mostly. Not really into Ultimate Team, honestly. Like really? Many people are. Nah, not really, man. But it's okay, you know. I just like to play with friends and that kind of stuff. So maybe I'm an odd guy.
No, totally. I understand. I like playing multiple different modes of it. I do like Ultimate Team. I like Seasons though. And if I still had the PlayStation 4, I might have to, you know, put on a clinic, man. You know. And, if you can come get this work, go ahead.
You should try in the, what's it, exhibition mode. You got a game. You play against another team, and every time you score, one player got taken off randomly from your team.
Oh wow!
Five players can take off. So at the end, if it's like 5-5, you end with 6-6, and then you just can play on.
That's awesome. I didn't know about that. That's super cool. Got a whole lot to talk about today, especially being that this is we have kind of crawled upon the dawn of the biggest fight week per se, according to some, in the history of the sport. And whether you listening to this or you yourself, Marcel, is a believer in that, you know, kind of dawning of such strong and powerful words to put on this event is beneath to oneself. However, it is finally here, and we are just now 4 days away from Conor McGregor trying to take out the undefeated 26-0 UFC lightweight champion Khabib Nurmagomedov.
Yeah, man, finally, it's gonna happen. What can you say about it, man? It's gonna happen.
I know, man, and it's something that when you bring it up, it's hard to find words for it. You saw me a second ago kind of sputtering to try to find the right exact adjectives to, you know, give the proper hyperboles to such a huge and massive fight that so many of us have been waiting for so long. On an analytical standpoint, though, it's not very difficult to see the matchup that is presented to us. You have this classic striker versus grappler matchup, but I think there are a lot more intricacies beneath the cracks when it comes to this fight. What do you think about this matchup stylistically when you kind of scratch the surface for it?
Yeah, it's pretty much what you said. It's definitely a classic striker versus grappler matchup. That's mostly of it. Khabib will try to take the fight to the ground. He maybe tries to punch something, but I don't think it's a good idea. Conor tries to land that big punch. It will be like that. If it goes to the later rounds, I think Khabib has the edge there because we saw in fights that Conor had against Nate Diaz, after the second round, he kind of gasses definitely in the last fight against Nate Diaz. Khabib is just, he's an animal, man. You know, on the ground, who will stop him on the ground, you know?
Yeah.
It's so hard. It's very hard to predict. You know, for me, you want the prediction?
No, not quite yet.
Okay.
Not quite yet. We'll definitely kind of divulge into that in a little bit, but
that's why I ask.
Yeah, no, it's totally. I think the narrative is kind of unanimous among everybody. It's going to be definitely in the champion's favor. Speaking of Khabib Nurmagomedov, for the fight to, you know, exit the first or the second round. But man, you know, time and time again, I was talking about this fight in greater detail with some people that, you know, may not be as into the sport as you and I. And I think that's something that you could find prevalent in a lot of situations with this fight. You know, there are going to be a lot more people interested than there would be, you know, like a Woodley versus a Till or a Dillashaw versus a Garbrandt too. And with all of that being said, you really have to dig deep to find an edge for either guy as the total package kind of presents themselves. And particularly in this one, when you look at both guys' resumes, there's been time and time again, Conor McGregor has been counted out. But you look at the resume, Eddie Alvarez, Jose Aldo in 13 seconds. He did have the hiccup with Nate Diaz, but then went back and beat him two weight classes higher than he had previously fought in ever in the UFC. I mean, and the list goes on. He took out Dustin Poirier. He beat Max Holloway on a torn ACL. I think the resumes aren't very easily comparable here, although Khabib ragdolled RDA and also took out a guy in Edson Barbosa. And, of course, Ally Aquinta, too. I don't want to, you know, take any credit away from that win either, but it seems on paper Conor McGregor has definitely shined in the bigger moments.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, but it's also the styles that kind of show that, you know. People are more, more hyped about somebody getting knocked out than somebody getting ragdolled for 25, 50 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, that's a thing, you know. That's why if I look around the world, not just for the U.S., because I know in America wrestling is really big, but if you look here in Europe, if they have the choice between a great wrestling clinic or a kickboxing clinic, 99% will go for the kickboxing clinic, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I could agree with that. There's so many layers to this matchup too. And I think that first off, before you dig any deeper into talking about this matchup as a whole, do you think the press conference might have gotten Khabib's head? I thought Conor had some dark things to say.
I think the things Conor said, yeah, I knew these things, you know. I also read the Bloody Elbow, I read Karim Zidane's stuff, so it's nothing new for me. But listen, he can say stuff about Vyuzadin Magomedov, Ramzan Kadyrov. I mean, and about the death of Khabib Abdulmanap. But on the other hand, Conor is also a guest at the FIFA World Cup from Putin. So, you know, it goes both ways if you look at that. And I'm not really into mixing up sports with politics. That's not totally what I like.
Me neither.
And I don't think it should be done. It's really the only thing he tried to get in Khabib's head, with the Islam thing and the drinking thing, you know, like right. He was like, here, you have something for your birthday. Listen, he knows he's a Muslim and he doesn't drink, you know. Let's be honest, it was also just a trick. I don't care for that, man. I mean, that's literally what I said after the press conference. I know people enjoy that stuff, but I'm all about the fight. I'm really all about the fight, and I don't need these things to hype me up for something, you know.
Right. Yeah.
You are like that as well. You watch also everything. I watch everything. Yep. I don't need that extra kind of thing. I'm already want to see that fight. I want to see that fight for 2 or 3 years now. 2 years. Yeah, I think definitely 2 years now. So what's the thing, you know? I don't need the extra hype. I understand people enjoy that. I want to see that and all that kind of stuff. But for me, I think for and that kind of sounds cocky or stuff, but I don't mean it that way. But for the hardcore fan, you will just watch anyway, you know?
No, totally. I think you made some really good points there, and I'm kind of the same way. It really all just boils down to the fight. Some added extracurriculars I don't think ever go a wrong way into helping the promotion of it. But again, I know you yourself, particularly in your own skin, are a lot more into, you know, the final result than the ultimatum of the hype of promotion.
Definitely, man. I also don't believe in, you know, before the fight, we have to be nasty against each other, you know, and after the fight, we are such a good friends and, oh, how are you? And let's go barbecue together and that kind of stuff. I mean, come on. Who are we playing? Who are we playing to, you know? I know people really think 9 out of 10 times when fighters get into the cage, they really hate each other. But 9 out of 10 times, it's not the case. It's only maybe 1 out of those 10 times. But yeah, what can you do?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that there is an added kind of element of disdain to say between these two, and I think it does cause kind of some sort of interesting imbalance. For the betting lines, as far as they're concerned, a lot of people were kind of expecting the line to kind of dive towards even during fight week towards Conor McGregor, but the lines honestly at this point are even inflating in Khabib Nurmagomedov's favor right now as it stands on a courtesy of betonline.ag. Khabib Nurmagomedov at -165 and Conor McGregor at +145. Are you surprised a lot of the people that are putting their money on this fight aren't kind of edging towards Conor?
No, because Conor is, for the average fight fan, is a much bigger name than Khabib Nurmagomedov. You know, if I go here down the street and I ask what they think about Khabib Nurmagomedov, who is that? They will say. And if I say this, it's the guy with the wig who fights Conor, oh, that guy, then they know. But if I say who's Conor McGregor, they will 100% know who he is, you know, and that's kind of the thing. People will, they hear about this fight, and there are also a lot of fans who just watch once and then a fight, you know what I mean? Just like when they hear about it, when it's got a lot of media hype, they watch that. And Conor McGregor always had that media hype. Khabib never actually really had that media hype. So I can see people picking Conor McGregor. And let's be honest, he has a huge fan base as well. So, and not everybody in Russia is a Khabib fan, because it's really parted with people from Dagestan, Chechens, Russians, and you get more, you know. And the Russians, I've talked to some Russians, and they really want Conor to win. Pure Russians, they want Conor to win, but it's a crazy thing, you know. And I don't say, like, you have to be fan or you have to support your fighter from your country. I will never say that, because if you had to support every fighter from your country, you couldn't choose about, like, almost every card. Because in America, how many fighters do you have in the UFC? Know what I mean?
Yeah, no, totally. That's a good point. There's a large, not so much an imbalance, especially with how they're actually, you know, you definitely know amongst the rest of us that Eurasia and Russia is a major talent pool right now in the UFC, and they're trying to break into that market extensively. But as far as the guys that are in the UFC right now from Dagestan is concerned, I mean, there's a larger influx in talent from Russia than there are, you know, not from the UK as a whole, but from Ireland. Definitely, you have, you know, the Khabibs of the world, the Zabits of the world, the Islam Makhachevs of the world. These Russians are no joke, man. Another added kind of curveball into this fight week, I think, will be interesting, especially as, you know, the open workouts take place tomorrow, and I know there's supposed to be some sort of press conference on Thursday. Whether it's just Khabib and Conor or the main and co-main that'll both be up there. Tony Ferguson being involved in the co-main event definitely adds a little bit of an intriguing layer to this, in my opinion. Whether it's for like a all cross fingers, all who holds their breath type of situation in case anything were to happen to Khabib or Conor this week, that seems like a smart kind of added incentive towards this pay-per-view. However, all of that being said, I do like the matchup between Ferguson and Pettis as the co-main, and could definitely see the winner of that fight getting the next title shot if Diaz and Poirier somehow, some way, and we'll get to UFC 230 in a little bit. Don't get me wrong on that. I think the winner of that fight could put themselves in very solid position to fight for the title next, depending on what happens next month in November.
Yeah, I agree. It's really a great addition, actually, to the card, Pettis and Ferguson, and also as a backup. You know, if one would fall off of an injury, you could put one of them in the fight. Definitely Ferguson, of course, would it be then? But what you said about betting lines, I think after the public press conference, it will again shift.
Yeah, no, totally. Because as I said, it looks right here, as according to BetOnline.com, it's -165 for Khabib Nurmagomedov and +145 for Conor McGregor. And the co-main event is a little bit more, it's a little bit wider. Tony Ferguson's hitting at -360 and Anthony Pettis just south of +300 at +295. Do you see this as a mismatch? I think a lot of people do, but I think Anthony Pettis' game in the scramble and his jiu-jitsu is incredibly underrated.
Honestly, there's a mismatch, but I just have so much trouble picking against Tony Ferguson, you know, because he is good everywhere, but he is touchable, you know. So if Pettis lands that good shot, and I know we all know he's capable of landing that shot, it can happen. Sorry, sometimes for my English is sometimes like a little bit.
But you're okay, my man.
Okay, thank you, man. But yeah, I don't see it as a mismatch. Actually, I'm really looking forward to it. But yeah, I won't give my prediction yet, so it's hard if you ask about the fight to not give the prediction. But I will keep it for later.
That seems fair. And then, of course, as you continue, but before I get into kind of the rest of the card, do you think the UFC did well in making this card? I thought the decision to only put this fight talking about Khabib and Conor as the only title fight on the card, I thought that was the right decision, even though there were some griping and bitching about it. I wouldn't know why there would be. But, you know, you have fights between ranked opponents on every single fight on the main card and as the featured prelim. I know that a lot of people were excited to see Sugar Sean O'Malley as well. However, I think this card is pretty solid from top to bottom, especially when you don't want to kind of overflow an amount of, you know, like title fights and title eliminators on a card that really is going to ultimately be focused on one centralized main event.
I tell you something crazy, man. I think it's a great card. I mean, I didn't expect that when I hear Conor versus Khabib is getting on this card and nobody else would get pay-per-view points or something. You know, I really didn't expect they were going to, how do you say that, going to line up this card like they do now. You know, I didn't expect that. And I like the card, you know. There are some intriguing matchups on this card, on the main card, on the prelims. The early prelims, there are also a few good fights on there that I'm looking forward to. So, yeah, you can. How can you? I mean, this is a good card, man. This is better than we had. I think than most people had expected after they heard Conor McGregor is fighting Khabib on this card. This is already a sellout for the UFC with that fight only. So they really don't have to stack that card because everybody's going to buy the pay-per-view. If you buy pay-per-view, you're gonna buy this pay-per-view, let's be honest. And so I was pretty surprised.
I think that this card, I was kind of surprised maybe with the ordering of it a little bit. I do understand, though, one thing I do understand, in a guy that has understandably so not been talked about whatsoever is a guy in 12th ranked light heavyweight contender Dominic Reyes. Obviously, you know, if you're a guy that's going to fight on this card, it's going to be understandable if you are a very rare talent and you're not going to be talked about, given who is going to be in the red and blue corner when the main event comes around. However, I believe that a guy that could make a very lasting impression on a lot of maybe casual fans per se is a guy like Dominic Reyes at light heavyweight, who will be taking on the biggest test of his career in a seventh-ranked Ovin St. Preux.
Yeah, definitely. But he's on pay-per-view, right?
Yeah, they're the fight right before the co-main.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm actually not really surprised with the pay-per-view card. I expected Jussier Formiga against Sergio Pettis on the prelims because of the flyweights. Right? Yeah, and I hate that because I love the flyweight division and they deserve the extra exposure to be on the pay-per-view, I think.
I agree.
But yeah, the only fight so far, flyweight, man's flyweight, was Davison Alcantara against Jordan Moraga on the main card. And that was actually first on the prelim. But that went to the main card after Braga Neto against Sanchez got switched for Sanchez against Maluku Perez.
Yep.
So I don't know, man. I mean, why do UFC is like this bad against flyweights? I love the flyweight division, man. And I may be one of the few people, but I really love the flyweight division.
I do too. I do too. They're so quick and technical, and if the flyweight division is kind of a division where you're going to look at it as per se. If you got into the sport and you started loving MMA for the big knockouts and oh my god, like look at that submission and all of these highlights. You know, those people aren't going to really enjoy the flyweight division as much as some people like you and I that are a lot into the technical aspects of it and a lot into the chess match kind of mindset of the sport. Because I tell people all the time, I think the best explanation of what mixed martial arts really was said by, of course, Joe Rogan on his podcast when he said he thinks high level problem solving with dire physical consequences. I think that's the best explanation that pretty much anyone could give. And the flyweight division is a testament to that. It really is high level problem solving in there. And especially when guys are so fast and so inept to, or so apt to, if I must say, to kind of bounce around and be free with their movement and, you know, move around and make things difficult on their opponents. I think the flyweight division is overlooked as well, criminally.
Yeah, but please, how can somebody say to me, like, I don't like to watch 50-minute flyweight scrap because they are short? That's literally what people say to me.
It's the stupidest shit I've ever heard.
And I like heavyweights for 50 minutes. Dude, let's be honest. All heavyweights, and I don't want to be disrespectful, below top 10 and even in top 10 sometimes after the first round, it's really hard to watch.
Yeah, no, totally. I agree with you. And it's because, you know, these are big guys. They're running out of cardio. They're losing their breath. I would really question someone that would say they would enjoy to watch heavyweights for 15 minutes as opposed to flyweights. Just because, I mean, they start looking like they're fighting underwater after a certain period of time. it's true, man. And like I said, I'm not trying to be not trying to be disrespectful to any heavyweights either. There are a lot of talented heavyweight fighters. And I don't want to get too off topic, but did you see, I'm trying to make sure I pronounce his name right, Cyril Gane against Adam Dichka at TKO 44.
Only highlights, not the whole fight.
That guy looks so scary. Like the Gane, Cyril Gane, it was only his second pro fight. And Dichka was on a lot of people's radars as like a really highly touted heavyweight. And man, this guy from France, Cyril Gane, just went in there and steamrolled him. I was so impressed. I didn't watch it live. I saw Nolan King tweet about it, and I had to go back on Fight Pass and watch it. And I was thoroughly impressed.
Okay, I have to watch it back because I only saw the highlights, and you can't really make much up about highlights always.
Right. His Muay Thai acumen was phenomenal. He was using his knees in the clinch. He was, you know, bouncing around. He didn't look tired. He's massive. He's like 6'7". It's like guys like that in the heavyweight division that, you know, can become elite talents, like guys that don't expend too much energy and use their acumen into their own advantage.
Like a guy like Juan Adams, who was on the Contender Series.
Yeah.
He walks around at 285 or something. I don't know.
But I thought I saw him say 295.
295 either. Yeah, he's big. But he was impressive.
Yeah, he impressed me a lot. He definitely did. And, you know, he's he's a guy that can promote himself and, you know, blah, 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 stuff like that.
Yeah.
So what do you think about, kind of backtracking to the Ovince St. Preux Dominic Reyes matchup? What do you think about that matchup? Dominic Reyes, you know, 9-0, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, without looking it up, he's finished all of his opponents in the UFC in the first round, and I think all of his opponents in his professional career outside of one in the first round. And then Ovince St. Preux, who really has had his ups and downs, but is coming off a huge win after he got dropped against a guy like Tyson Pedro, where he got it done by straight armbar. What do you think about this matchup?
It's hard to predict, man, and that's literally because it's about how does OSP show up. It's literally about how does he show up. Do we see the OSP we saw in fights that he... I really don't know, man. It's really hard because Dominic Reyes, we know what he can do, but can he do it against a guy who is like top 10 for years now? Can he do it against him? And OSP, he finds sometimes a way to win, but I'm not really impressed lately by OSP. So I really always liked OSP. Don't get me wrong, Strikeforce, I watch them always. It's really hard this fight for me to predict OSP. I think he will try to take him to the ground if he can do that, and if he can control him, maybe he will win. But Dominic Reyes will try to look for that knockout. And we saw OSP, if he gets hit, he can stumble pretty bad. But like you said, he got the win against middle straight on against Tyson Pedro, who was in huge trouble in that fight. And yeah, he got the win somehow. So hard to predict, man. But yeah, what do you think, man?
I think it's an interesting matchup. It's not per se one of those crossroads fights, but... you know, a guy like Ovince St. Preux is a tough out in any capacity for any light heavyweight, as is his adversary Dominic Reyes, who will definitely be getting his first kind of big time per se opponent in the light heavyweight division. You know, he got the knockout of Jared Cannonier in Chile. I was there in Detroit when he submitted Jerry Kimball, and I think Joachim Christensen in Oklahoma City was where he won his UFC debut, and I could be wrong. I can't remember, but I think that's correct. There are a lot of pointers that definitely lead me to believe that Dominic Reyes can get this victory and climb into the top seven of the light heavyweight division. But man, I mean, I just can't ever count out a guy like Ovince St. Preux. I think the last two or three times I've picked against Ovince St. Preux, I've eaten my words. So it's a difficult kind of climb to make.
I agree. It's a hard fight to pick.
It really is. And another one that is going to be a difficult fight to make is it's going to be interesting to see Derek Lewis after you know, everyone's consensus most disappointing fight of the year with Francis Ngannou back at UFC 226. How do you think he can bounce back against a tough, very, very tough guy in Alexander Volkov?
You want the bold prediction?
Let me hear it.
Easy money for Volkov.
I have to favor Volkov in this matchup too, and the betting odds seem to agree with us. I think at the moment it's minus 175 for Volkov and plus 150 for Lewis.
Yeah, and I can explain you why I think it's not that hard fight for Volkov. It's Derek Lewis. I really like the guy, but his fights, let's be honest, against Shamil Abdurakhimov, I don't know if you remember, that was the main event for UFC Albany. He got dominated for 3.5 rounds, and then he got somehow, Abdurakhimov was so tired, and he punched him out, TKO, in the fourth round. I remember a fight against was that Francis Ngannou? Let's never talk about that fight again. That was so worse, you know. I remember a fight against Travis Brown where he was very much tagged, and he said he had the boo boo, but he was hurt in the first round. But Travis Brown didn't recognize it, and he got TKO'd in the second round. So, not to talk bad about Derek Lewis, he's a cool guy, I think, but Volkov is on another level, you know, and Volkov can win this fight by by dominating him on the ground and tagging him on the feet because he's quicker. And Derek Lewis had so much, how do you say that, also back problems, you know. He's not very movable inside the cage. And I think this is a really bad matchup for Derek Lewis. And I think Volkov is going to solidify his name as the next title contender, or having a next fight against Curtis Blaydes if he gets past Francis Ngannou.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it is a tough matchup for Lewis. I agree. And Volkov is kind of criminally underrated as well in his own right in the UFC heavyweight division. But regardless, a fight that I think the flyweights could have been put on in place of is, but you called it. I remember you predicting it exactly. Michelle Waterson and Felice Herrig get the main card going. What do you think about that matchup?
Karate Hardy has to try to keep this fight on the feet, but Felice has also a big background in Muay Thai kickboxing, so it can be maybe pretty even on the feet. I don't even know for sure, but if Felice gets it to the ground, we saw against Courtney Casey, Waterson was in deep trouble on the ground, and she won the fight by split decision. I'm a huge Karate Hardy fan since I saw her for the first time. And at that time, it had nothing to do with her striking or fight capabilities. Big then I became a fan, but right now I am because of that. But yeah, I see Felice Herrig dominating with the wrestling, to be honest. And that's basically it.
Me too. I thought Felice Herrig fought a little bit better than other people may have anticipated against Karolina Kovalkiewicz. And I actually thought Kovalkiewicz displayed some very, what's the word I'm looking for? She displayed some strength in that fight that I didn't think she was capable of, in kind of not dominating, but winning certain grappling exchanges with Herrig. However, I don't think Waterson will have the acumen to keep up with that type of game as well. I think she's got to keep it on the feet. I agree with you in that sense. Speaking of the flyweights, Sergio Pettis and UCA Formiga, I think, could determine who ends up kind of as the number one contender to be in the flyweight division.
Yeah, also I agree with this one, but many people, and I was actually in a Twitter talk with people after the Benavidez against Pettis fight. Many people thought Pettis won. I think he definitely won the first round. He dropped Benavidez, almost finished him. But yep. I had two and three for Benavidez. So that's my opinion. I might be a little biased because I'm a huge Benavidez fan, but I always try to look from a neutral point of view, a standpoint.
Of course. So,
and I really think Benavidez adds it second and third round. But that's it. Sergio Pettis is really doing well. And only against Henry Cejudo, he really got like completely vanished, I think, in that fight. But he looked very good against Brandon Moreno, when Brandon Moreno was actually, I think, the favorite going into that fight. But he looked amazing in that fight. Formiga, most underrated guy in the flyweight division, in my opinion. I think since the ranking started, he has been in the top five. And he is the only guy who never fought Demetrius Johnson for the belt, which is actually crazy because guys like Wilson Hayes, Kyoji Horiguchi, who were ranked at 8 at that time, never fought against guys like Benavidez, Dodson at that time. They got the title shot. And Formiga had to go through Dodson, had to go through Benavidez, had to go through Cejudo, and never got the actual title fight because he had to go through that stiffer competition that other people didn't get. So Formiga, for me, is definitely a top four fighter. I still think he has more, more ways to win than Sergio Pettis. People might disagree with that, but I think he will get it done on the ground. Submission win in the first round, I'm going to say. I see him getting this to the ground and finishing it. He's an animal, man. Formiga, he gets way too much underrated, but let me know what you think.
I think that I might agree with you on the premise that Formiga could have more ways to win the fight. I think that Sergio Pettis might have the X factor in this fight, though, and I think that what he showed, it was the tale of two different Sergio Pettises in his last two fights. You know, he could not stop Henry Cejudo from taking him down, but he thwarted the takedown offense of Joseph Benavidez and kept the fight right where he wanted it pretty much the whole time. It really is just going to depend on what Sergio Pettis is going to be able to do as far as stopping Formiga from trying to take him down. Because if the fight goes to the ground, I mean, that's in Formiga's world. And especially, you know, this is a type of matchup and a type of fight that where in one corner, you see a Formiga, for example, if he gets your back, it's not looking good from there. And, you know, Sergio Pettis isn't per se a submission threat to the T that Formiga is. So, yeah, I could agree with you that he does have more ways to win the fight. But if Pettis comes out against Formiga the same way that he came out against Benavidez, there's no reason, in my opinion, I don't think that he can get his hand raised.
Something. Oh, you want me to reply? Yeah, could be as well, man. But I really think Formiga will get this done, but I might be wrong, man. You know, it's
we can see
it's a 50-50 choice. You know, you gotta pick someone, and I just say what I think, and I can see your point definitely, because I think more people will go with Pettis as well, and I gotta stay with my point of view, and I'm taking Formiga on this one, but I won't be surprised if Pettis wins this fight.
Of course, of course. Moving on, a kind of a late addition to this card was a welterweight matchup between Vicente Luque and newcomer Jalen Turner. Jalen Turner, for those who might forget, was on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series earlier this summer and was in an absolute hell of a round between a friend of the Bottom Line podcast, Max Moustaki. Max came on and was talking to me a little bit about the fight and said that he wanted to continue going. But a guy like Jalen Turner really showed a lot of potential in this fight, but he might be biting off more than he can chew with a guy like in Vicente Luque, who somehow, some way, has still not drawn a number 15 or higher opponent.
Yeah, I'm actually very upset with the UFC that they put Jalen Turner in a welterweight fight against Vicente Luque. I mean, Jalen Turner is a lightweight. Why would you put a guy who is still on young, still has to make his UFC debut, who didn't get the contract actually on the Dana White Tuesday Night Contender Series, which I think he should have got at least a developmental deal. He didn't get anything. Now he's in the UFC. I understand from Jalen's point of view he takes this fight because it's a huge chance. If he wins this fight, somehow he will be getting higher, even higher opponents, higher ranked guys. I think Luca is just below the top 15, but he is very close to be in the top 15. I don't like this matchup at all because Jalen is lightweight and I think he should stay at lightweight. I take Vicente Luque by way of a Dars choke or a submission win for Vicente Luque. And I hope that Jalen Turner gets another fight in the UFC, which he should, I think, and at lightweight where he can show his full potential.
Yeah, Jalen Turner for either weight class is incredibly long. You know, he's really long, really rangy, uses his kickboxing very well. But a guy like Vicente Luque, who has the nose for the finish, could definitely find another one in his favor this weekend. And I don't know how, and I said it after the knockout of Chad Laprise, I don't know how this guy hasn't earned a top 15 opponent. Really won't know how he still won't have that distinction if he can't. Or if he does finish off a guy like Jalen Turner on Saturday. Women's bantamweights take on each other with a couple of 135ers in their sophomore octagon appearances. It's Aspen Ladd, who is ranked number 9, and she takes on former UFC featherweight women's title challenger Tanya Evinger. The odds were just about even when the line came out, and I think they're spreading out to around where I thought they'd be at this point. Aspen Ladd at minus 160, Tanya Evinger at plus 140. What do you see this matchup bringing?
This is actually the new kid on the block in the division, I can say, against the veteran. But I feel for, I think the veteran, Avenger, she impressed me a lot in Invicta. I thought she did very well. She was a champion over there. And also she... she gave Cyborg a much tougher fight than many people thought. Let's be honest. People thought she was done after, she would be done in the first round. She got to the third round. She's very tough. She has a really good ground game, trained for years with Josh Barnett. I have to go with Avenger on this one, but won't be surprised if Aspinlat wins this one because it's that close of a matchup. I think Aspinlat also can win this fight. Split decision win for Tonya Avenger, but a really tough fight to pick. There are way more 50-50 fights on this card than many people think, actually, because I think that with this card, you can go, if you pick, you can go like 12-0, but you can easily go like 2-10, for example.
Yeah, no, this is a really interesting matchup. I think Aspen Ladd has incredible top control and uses her kind of grappling to her own advantage where she can get some solid ground and pound going. Evinger is kind of the same fighter. It's just going to be a determining factor as to who implements their game plan a little bit better, in my opinion. A fight that was moved up to the prelim scale from the fight pass prelims as a result of Sean O'Malley's subsequent withdrawal will be Scott Holtzman and Alan Patrick. Patrick is at -240 and Holtzman at +205, with Patrick's lone professional loss coming the same way as many others by first round KO to Mirbek Taisumov. You know, I see decision written all over this one. What do you think?
Yeah, decision and pretty much decisive. Unanimous decision for Alan Patrick. He's a very underrated guy. He has, he was at a certain moment, he was pretty much like gone from the UFC. I mean, he didn't fight for a very long time, if I can remember, like a few years ago. He's the guy that broke his jaw. Do you remember that grueling picture of him? Like, you saw those teeth? Like, yeah.
I do.
If I see Alan Patrick, I immediately have to think about that picture. So, but he's tough, man. He has great jiu-jitsu. His top control game is very tough. He is a former, or still a training partner of Jacare Souza, which actually says enough. If you're a training partner with Jacare Souza, you have to be good on your ground game. And unanimous decision win, maybe a late choke submission, maybe something like a rear naked choke after some strikes to the head. He turns himself, and you know what I mean. But Alan Patrick, unanimous decision. I think it's one of the most safe bets of the night, without giving any disrespect to Scott Holtzman.
Yeah, I agree. I think you kind of hit it on all cylinders right there. And then when the fight passed prelims come to a conclusion, it'll be headlined on that portion of the card by the elbow queen Lena Landsberg taking on Yana Kunitskaya in her UFC women's bantamweight debut. I think it's fair to give Yana Kunitskaya her own opportunity in the weight class that she really does call home after one of, if not the most difficult calls for a debut in all of women's MMA back in March against Chris Cyborg.
Yeah, I agree. It's the bantamweight division in the UFC for women's is pretty much very thin. They have like 20 girls in the division, and 15 are ranked, obviously. And,
right.
Yeah. And Yana isn't ranked yet because she fought first for the featherweight, but she'll definitely be ranked after this fight because I like Lena Landsberg is not a bad fighter. She's pretty much she's always in wars. You know, Lena Landsberg is always in a war. And I see Yana Kunitskaya taking this fight probably by a submission in the first or second round. She does have way more ways to win. And I can see her losing this fight, honestly. I think this is a perfect matchup for her to show her skills to get. I don't want to say a second chance because it's pretty tough to say you get a first chance and let's see it against Cyborg, but she gets a chance to make a new impression to the fight fans who haven't seen her fight before in Invicta. And I think many people will like what they're going to see.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. And a fight down from that is Gray Maynard and Nick Lentz. And Nick Lentz will have, you know, kind of an opportunity to get back on track. And a guy in Gray Maynard who, you know, a stat that tells a lot of the story. Maynard 13-6-1 as a professional and 11-6-1 in the UFC. So only two times this guy has made weight, strapped up, gotten ready. for a fight that's not inside the UFC's octagon, I think that's incredibly impressive. Nick Lentz with almost an identical UFC record of 12-6-1. It should be an interesting fight between two veterans there.
Yeah, absolutely. Nick Lentz, what was his most recent fight?
It was against David Taymor.
Yeah, of course. And I think he did pretty well in that fight. I don't think he got enough. That was in Utica, if I remember correctly.
Correct.
He did pretty well, and he was upset with the decision, if I remember correctly. And
I thought Taymor won the fight.
Yeah, I agree, but it was much more closer than people gave it credit for.
Yeah.
And Gray Maynard, like 2 years ago against Ishihara at the tough final, if I'm correct. A win finally after that amazing fight against Ryan Hall, and I mean amazing fight. Yeah, what can you say, man? I think Gray Maynard, he is a tough veteran, but I don't see him winning against Nick Lentz. Lentz still has that fire in him, doesn't come always out, but he still has that. And Gray Maynard is a little bit, I think he's not really in this, who am I to say, actually, but I don't see him, I don't really think he's in the thing anymore. And Nick Lentz by unanimous decision, 29-28, 30-27.
All right, and then
what about you?
I think that Nick Lentz should probably get the fight done by decision. I got ahead of myself there, but I do agree with you. I think Nick Lentz will be able to use a game plan that could see him take a decision. I do like his jiu-jitsu. I think that he's pretty solid on the ground, and then. So just because I'm just a little bit pressed for time, we do have one more fight, but I definitely want to leave with our thoughts on the UFC 230 main event as well. Ryan LaFlair and Tony Martin. This is very interesting to me because Ryan LaFlair opened up at about minus 225, and he has gone all the way down from minus 225 to minus 150. Lots and lots of money coming in on Tony Martin. Do you see the value in Tony Martin as an underdog, or do you think Ryan LaFlair gets it done?
I would always go for Ryan LaFlair. His ground game is solid, man. His wrestling is amazing. He doesn't get a lot of credit for it. He only had two slip-ups in the UFC against Damian Maia, who was just – he challenged Damian Maia, but Damian was better on the ground than he is. And Damian is, like, literally better than 95% of the division on the ground. And he dominated Cowboy Oliveira in the first round, but got knocked out in the second. But besides that, he won everything. All with decision. He calls himself the Decisionator. I'm totally okay with that.
Yeah, he does call himself that.
Yeah. And he will win against Tony Martin. Plus the fact that Tony Martin came up from lightweight to welterweight. There will be also, I think there will be pretty much of a gap between LaFlair is actually a big welterweight and Martin is a smaller welterweight. So, and with that said, LaFlair, 30-27, unanimous decision.
I'm with you on that as well. So just before we get ready to wrap things up, obviously the masses are pretty upset with today's announcement that the UFC will be returning to Madison Square Garden with the blockbuster main event of Valentina Shevchenko and Sajara Eubanks. First off, my thing is with it first. It was or was not Valentina Shevchenko versus Joanna Jędrzejczyk a much more intriguing and much more appealing fight? Because it definitely was. And I think everyone's kind of consensus viewpoint is it's almost comical at this point that the UFC just will do anything and sacrifice any type of integrity for its main pay-per-view appearances just to have a title fight at the top of the bill. And I think it's a little bit ridiculous.
It is, man. I mean, can you remember back in the days, not even the Nate versus Conor fights, but back in the days that you had a five-fight pay-per-view card, but you were pumped for five fights, not just the main event, but you liked the five fights that were on that. Where have they gone, man? Do you really have to put a championship fight to get to the masses? And this is not a fight that people will like, yes, I want to pay the pay-per-view right now. listen, and this is literally kicking in open doors, but Nate Diaz versus Dustin Poirier will do much more as a five-rounder than Valentina versus Sajara will do for a title fight at MSG. And nothing against Sajara Eubanks, because she got some nasty comments on Twitter, which I actually don't like. Because
Me neither. I was going to say that. Me neither.
That's just stupid. You know, she gets an opportunity of a lifetime, second chance. And why shouldn't she take it, man? I mean, she believes in herself like every other fighter does. I don't see the problem in that. The problem what I have is that the UFC announced Valentina versus JJ in Toronto, and they just pulled that fight off the card. People actually were pumped for that fight in Toronto. Yeah. You know? Yeah. And now they are like, we can put Max against Ortega there, then we pull that other fight. And that's bullshit.
Yeah,
you
man.
Know, you can't do that. If I would have no problem if they made Valentina against Sarge or Valentina against Chookagian, if that was the first plan. I wouldn't care. You know?
No, yeah.
But you do, you're not gonna, but let's go a little bit deeper in that. Joanna, why doesn't she fight Valentina in MSG? Nobody knows.
I think that has something to do with Joanna's schedule. I mean, if she can fight in December at Toronto and can't fight in November at MSG, that's definitely got to be on something on her end, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, definitely. But that's just weird. I would have seen something more. How do you say that? More information about it from the UFC. You know?
Yeah.
Because now you get also people saying like maybe she is caught by USADA and that kind of stuff, you know, and that's also bad. Just like with the O'Malley thing, I like it that the UFC doesn't put out like random stuff like he is caught by USADA, blah blah blah. But if it contains a fight that people are looking forward to, it, you got to be more open, because now you get those rumors, you get those how do you say that, those stories that is maybe not correct.
Right.
You know, and you should clear it up, not only for the fans, but also for the fighter, because that's just stupid.
Yeah, man. And again, I would like to go further in depth on a lot of these things, but I am a little bit pressed for time, and I do have.
Sorry.
No, you're totally all right, man. We do have to say goodbye today, but again, another fantastic podcast here with my man Marcel. You got any closing thoughts for me, my man, or any last words about this card this weekend? I'm giddy with excitement about it.
We still have to pick the main event, brother.
Oh, man. I think I'm going to go Conor McGregor round two TKO. I think that, you know, once guys do get hit with that left hand, they fall. And we've seen it time and time again. However, I would be equally as unsurprised if Khabib does grind out a decision or a late round TKO, in my opinion. Other than a Khabib Nurmagomedov knockout of Conor McGregor, I don't think, or a Conor submission of Khabib, I don't think anything would really surprise me.
Okay.
What do you got?
Yeah. I go with Khabib TKO in the first or second round.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. But ground and pound, obviously, not by by punching him and knocking him down, but really by ground and pound. I see this happening, and maybe I shouldn't say that as media, but I hope it happens, and not because I'm anti Conor McGregor or whatever, but Conor McGregor already said that he maybe not defend the belt and he wants to fight Woodley for the welterweight division, welterweight title, and then the lightweight division is still on hold.
Yeah.
And I'm not wanting to see this division on hold. It's one of the best divisions in the UFC. That division has to keep going, you know?
Yep.
So it's just better for the division. It's better for the division if Khabib wins, and it's probably better for the UFC if Conor wins. But let's see what happens, you know? Yeah. And I can see it go both ways. Don't get me wrong. I see Conor knocking him out in the first round as well. So
I'm excited. I'm so excited. And I think I'm going to get a couple things I would have liked to talk about today, too, is I'll probably message you privately. You got the PFL playoffs on Friday night. I'm hyped about that. Bellator 206 just took place. You know, a lot to really digest and talk about. But as I said, I am a little bit pressed for time, but I definitely do want to get your opinions on that, you know, in the private sector of things. Thanks again, my man, for joining me today. And those watching, you know, you can find it on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and maybe tell everybody real quick about where they can find your work and your staff's writings as well.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me again. It's always a pleasure talking to you. Still have to work on my English, man. I'm sorry for that. But
don't be, man. I think your English is perfectly fine. I can only speak one language, man. I got to get that Rosetta Stone in my life.
Yeah, okay. Where can you find me? Big Marcel 24, Instagram, Facebook. Not Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. I just have a personal Facebook account. But you can find MMA DNA on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I want to thank all the guys from MMA DNA again. And I will say all their names. Michael, Leonard, Stefan, Edwin, Thomas, Ben, those six, and myself. But I'm not going to thank myself. again, thank you, Davidson, for having me, man. And I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. So thank you, man.
Always do, my man. Always do. I appreciate it very much so. And you and I will be in touch, my man. Have a good one.
Have a good one, man. 100%.
Yes, sir.